Welcome to Entrepreneurial Insights, a podcast brought to you by the Society of Entrepreneurs and hosted by Pearson Crutcher and Jay Healy. The Society of Entrepreneurs is a membership organization founded to promote entrepreneurship and provide education and resources to Memphis business owners.
In this podcast, we'll have a series of interviews with accomplished business owners and entrepreneurs in Memphis, Tennessee. There are so many great entrepreneurs in Memphis, and their stories need to be told.
Welcome to Entrepreneurial Insights. Welcome to Entrepreneurial Insights. Our guest today is Daphne Large. Daphne is the founder and CEO of DataFax. We hope that you will enjoy our conversation about starting and growing DataFax and hearing a little bit about Daphne's love for adventure and fast cars. Good afternoon. We are so excited for season three of Entrepreneurial Insights. Today, we have a very special interview with my good friend, Daphne Large. Welcome, Daphne.
Thank you, Pearson.
We're really excited about this.
Yeah, absolutely, Daphne. Daphne, as we get started, why don't you just give us the big elevator picture view of your business? What do you do? Who do you do it for? What services do you provide?
DataFax is a consumer reporting agency, Jay. We started back in 1989, so we're 32 years old. And what a consumer agency does in our business is national and international background screening. We serve employers of all sizes, all shapes and sizes, all industries. Anything an employer wants to know about an employee before they hire them or even post-hire, that's what we do.
Excellent. I know that you are a native Memphian, grew up here. Can you tell us a little bit about your entrepreneurial journey growing up? Did you know that business ownership was kind of your aspiration? Or tell me a little bit about growing up. I know you went to Briarcrest.
I did go to Briarcrest. And growing up, I did not know that business ownership was in my future, but I did know that I was always very opinionated and had very strong ideas. And so I'm just thankful I was able to put some of those ideas into action. Started at Equifax when I was 16. I was a senior, and there was a job in the paper for a steno to transcribe from tapes. I was actually hired as the mail clerk. I was very excited because I learned that the then president of all of Equifax Inc. had started out as the mail clerk. So I saw my future. And so there was an opportunity when I was 27 to leave. I also attended Memphis State University. I stayed there through college. I left when I was 27. There was just really a competitive landscape at that time. And so I was able to leave and take three employees with me and a silent investor and start DataFax. And we started in the mortgage credit reporting business at the time. But since then, we evolved into a full suite of all types of mortgage lending products. And of course, our national and international background screening.
Well, can you talk a little bit more about that decision that you knew that there was this opportunity? And what made you at 27 years old decide that, you know what, I can do this?
Well, I had been very fortunate at Equifax. I'd worked in operations. I'd worked in sales. I had, you know, grass-rooted sales venture into background screening and mortgage credit reporting. And so when I say there was a competitive landscape, there was, you know, Equifax Inc. owned a credit bureau at the time called CBI. We know them now just as Equifax. And they had a mortgage credit reporting sister company called Retail Credit that became under the umbrella of Equifax Services where I was. We wanted to bootstrap our own revenue, so I had started up a mortgage credit reporting division and grown that from zero to very large nationally. And at the same time, there was a credit bureau in Memphis that wanted to leave their association with their credit bureau chain. And they also did mortgage credit reporting. And so Equifax Inc. had to make the decision to either allow us to continue to do that and be in direct competition with their new company that came under the CBI or Equifax umbrella. And so I was able to go, you know what? I've started this from the ground up. I have a lot of loyal customers to me and this team. And it was just a great opportunity to leave and start that again and give customers choices. Had I not left, there would not have been any other choices in this town. And so customers wanted choices. And so we were successful from day one.
You know, I think about your industry and that there's got to be so many regulations. Do you think that that's something that you could have easily done in 2021 as you did back then?
Well, it's funny that when we started, an agreement for service to do business with our type of company was one page. They're probably 20 pages now, thanks to compliance and regulations. Certainly on the banking and the lending side, there's a lot of regulations around data security and privacy, but just as much so, if not even more, on the background screening side, because while there are federal laws and all of consumer data is governed by the Fair Credit Reporting Act, the FTC has oversight, the CFPB has oversight, and every state also has their own rules and regulations around background screening and consumer data. Some cities are even in on the game and have their own rules. So we have to manage, monitor, and pay attention to legislation and litigation around consumer reporting laws, not only federally, but within every state. And again, now some cities. I might make mention that DataFax also sold off in July 1st of this year our lending solutions division. So now we are so excited to be able to exclusively and solely focus on our huge national and international background screening business. So now that's our entire company.
So pre-employment, basically, yes. Mostly mm-hmm. background screenings.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. I know that industry's changed a lot too with what you can do checking out.
Right. So there's a lot of laws, again, federally or state. A lot of it is around second chance, making sure that every person has every opportunity, regardless of their, you know, felony or misdemeanor records, and that when an employer is making a decision about hiring someone, that they're taking into consideration not only the person's possible criminal record, but how it may affect the very specific job they're applying for, just to make sure that everyone has a fair chance. And in some states, they are now eliminating that you can even ask the question if you've been convicted of a crime or not. And so it does get very complicated.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating because whether you're a small business, a medium-sized business, or a large business, understanding and managing all those regulatory requirements on a state-by-state level and a federal level is super hard. So I could imagine that your expertise there is a real advantage.
Well, and we try to, you know, while we're not legal counsel for our customers, we certainly have the experience to offer guidance and samples and recommendations around specific authorizations. Every state is subject to have their own authorization around consumer reporting and what an employer has to disclose to an applicant upon applying for a job. And so we do pride ourselves. Compliance is really a foundation of our company. We are accredited by the PBSA. Less than 5% of companies go through that rigorous accreditation. We're also a founding member, which really demonstrates our commitment to best practices and early adoption of consumer and data privacy, you know, protection. So we take compliance very seriously at DataFax.
Well, we've talked a lot about how to hire, you know, doing the background checks, but how did you hire? I mean, you said you left with a team of key people when you left Equifax. How do you find and develop your best people?
Well, a lot of it is gut instinct, but of course, as you can imagine, we do a very thorough background check.
I bet you do.
And we put them through assessments, and we put them through a very thorough background check, and we're not afraid of digging in. We also hire by our core values, and we make sure that people are a great fit. And really, a lot of gut instinct is what we go by, especially if I'm involved in the interview, although unfortunately I'm not a lot of times anymore. But we're just looking for that person with a heart for customer service and a lot of common sense.
How many employees do you have now?
Well, we did have 130, and we're down to 70 after we sold off.
Is that company still in Memphis that you sold off,
no,
or did they go?
So, no, but they kept all the employees, so that was very important to us.
That's wonderful. That is great.
So if you think back, what would you say is one of the key drivers of the success of the company?
Really, our people, we're very strong about our foundation. And so from day one, our foundation was if we take great care of our people, they will take great care of our customers, who in turn take care of DataFax. And that just goes around and around, and it really, really works. Put your people first and you'll be successful.
Can you give us some examples of the culture? I know that DataFax has won several times best places to work from the Commercial Appeal and the Memphis Business Journal. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do to make it something, a place that people want to work?
Well, I think it goes back to our core values, Pearson. It's easy for a company to have core values on a website or up on a wall, but it's much, much harder to walk the walk and talk the talk. And we weave our core values into everything that we do. Hiring, if we have to fire, annual evaluations. Some of our core values are simply do the right thing. And what does that mean? It means do the right thing by our customers, by our employees, and our vendors who are so much a part of our culture and our organization. Another core value is good, better, best. Never let it rest until you're good as you're better and you're better as your best. I heard that all the time growing up, and it stuck with me, and it became a core value of DataFacts. And it just means in that constant pursuit of improvement, because that's what our customers expect. And it's kind of like yesterday's wins don't win today's ball games, right? We've got to continue to evolve and be better and better and be excited about that. Another one is be the green umbrella. Well, that sounds funny, right? But when everybody carries this black umbrella, right? And so when you see this bright green umbrella, that's us standing out above the crowd. And so when you're hired at DataFacts, it's a little silly little thing, but everybody gets a green umbrella, and we talk about that, and it's little subtle reminders of how do we stand out from the crowd, from our competitors. And it's not just saying we want to, but how do we stand out? And it's that, we call it going 212. It's another little cliche thing, but at 212 degrees, water boils, and that powers a locomotive. At 211 degrees, water does not boil. It will not power a locomotive. So it's that one degree of effort that can make you stand out and the company stand out. And that's how we are different, is we call it going 212.
I know that I am going to revisit this interview and make a lot of notes based on everything you just said.
That's great. I love the green umbrella. What a great visual for what your company believes.
I love visuals. Yes. Love visuals.
So was this your instinct right out of the gate, or did you learn some of these things?
I think as you mature as a leader and you mature as a CEO and an entrepreneur, and you pick up great ideas along the way, and just being a student of always learning and learning from people like you, Jay, and people, you know, I'm a people watcher and a people listener. I get a lot of great ideas from other people, but we're just consistent about adopting them and putting them into use.
And is that led by you?
Yes, but I have a great management team, and we call it the GCT, the Guiding Coalition Team. And I picked up that term from both Jim Collins and John Cotter, both authors of great books, of series of books. It's your leadership team, and we're very focused on not only following their examples, but also Vern Harnish Scaling Up. We're a disciple of the Scaling Up model. And I've read that book 15 times, and I just continue to go back to some of these old great resources and just keep reminding myself of what I'm supposed to do. I know what I'm supposed to do, but that consistent execution, right, is what's key. And I have to kick my own self every now and then, right?
I know from being in your office myself that you have tons and tons of business resources everywhere, books on every shelf everywhere. What's your current favorite?
Well, I'm still stuck on the old favorites. I love High Altitude Leadership. I love Scaling Up. I love all the John Cotter books. I love There Is No Try, Only Do by Bailey. Can't remember his first name, but he's also a Scaling Up follower and a coach at Petra. And I just keep going by those great old examples. I also love the old book, Swim with the Sharks. That's a great sales book if you ever want to just go back to basics, you know, whether it's 1951 or 2021, the basics are still there about good customer service and really knowing your customer. Also, love Shep Hyken. He's just a customer service guru, and he talks about moments of magic, you know, and moments of mediocrity. And we sometimes businesses fall into that mediocrity. I also like to remind our team that satisfied customers are your biggest threat to your business, because they're only satisfied. And satisfied customers are subject to leave, because you're only doing what you're promised. You're not wowing them in any way. And so we've got to constantly be looking for those opportunities. Not every single day can you turn just a moment into a moment of magic, but we sure work really hard to find those unique opportunities to be able to wow our customers, because that's why they stay.
That's great. You know, I know also that you do a lot of fun things with your employees and great training workshops that you do in-house. Can you talk a little bit about those things?
Well, we do a lot of fun things. It's been a little more difficult during COVID, but we've played quite a few virtual bingo games, and we'll stop and have a bingo break, and there's prizes. We do a lot of fun things with youth villages. We like to do Christmas parties at the office, wear your pajamas, have cocoa, bring in lunch. You know, we dress up at Halloween. We do all those fun things. We're always looking for ways to just keep the team connected, especially in this virtual environment and the hybrid environment. We've lost something. I think all employers have lost connections, and it's even more important to keep everybody connected as a family. Otherwise, you do begin to erode a little bit in that foundation or that commitment to core values. But we've been really strong because our team is really committed to that. But we do like, you know, we've done virtual escape rooms and lots of great speakers. We're always looking for fun things like that. We watch Halloween movies together as families. We watch Christmas movies, even virtually. You know, we'll have it on Zoom and broadcast, and just anything to keep the team connected.
Yeah, there's much more of a challenge today, isn't it? That's for sure.
Did you have to change anything business-wide during COVID in the last couple of years?
We were very aggressive. We started meeting at the end of February 2020. And so we already had our COVID plans laid out by first week of March because we just sensed that something was coming. So we were ramping up our mobile technology abilities and rolling out, you know, the virtual environment, preparing to have to leave if we had to. Luckily, what we do can be done remote. And we have a pretty sizable remote team already. Not everybody actually works in the Memphis office, a lot of people around the country. We had to change that. We had to go mobile. We decided to go 100% mobile. Then we were back in, and then we went back out, and now we're back in 3 days a week. So it's just constant evolution. But we acted very, very quickly, and we did suffer business losses. At DataFax, it was interesting in that the lending side, because of those low interest rates, really soared. 2020 was a record year. However, on the background screening side, we suffered about a 40% hit immediately, but we were very well balanced given the diversity of our business. But all of that has rebounded. We're actually going to be up significantly this year, even over last year. And so, you know, we've just been very blessed between the team and the customers and just those good relationships. We've just weathered the storm better than most.
It's a very interesting time to be thinking about employees and hiring. Have you had a hard time, like most so many people have, and finding good employees?
Yes.
At the time?
And being connected so intimately with the HR industry, we really got our finger on the pulse of what the national hiring scope looks like. At DataFax, in our 32 years in business and, you know, 10 years prior to that with Equifax, I've never seen anything like it. You cannot get people to work. And it's unfortunate. I mean, there's millions of jobs open, and I don't know if it's all the unemployment benefits or what, or people are just stressed out, tired, and burnt out. There's got to be some combination of all of that going on. But, you know, DataFax has had a great team in place. We still have a great team, but it has been very difficult to hire. And we have an office in Massachusetts and in Memphis, and it's been hard in both places.
Have you changed anything regarding hiring, or have you seen other firms who've gotten more traction?
Most people are looking at their wages, and do they need to adjust wages up? Do they need to, you know, what are their expectations? Do they need to look at their benefits? We're currently doing all of that, looking at what benefits do people want, knowing that you're not going to please all the people all the time, but do we need to offer a wider selection of benefits, which is what we're moving toward, and offering not only a wider selection, but a pool of money where people can use that money any way they choose versus just toward health insurance or just toward life insurance or something like that, just offering more flexibility. And in our employee surveys and in national trends, that's attractive. Right? People are looking for flexibility. They're also looking for the ability to work remote. All of those things we're looking at, if not already doing.
So what do you think? Do you think that businesses, even 5 years down the road, maybe hopefully COVID's in our rearview mirror, do you think that people will continue with the remote work?
I think that people are going to have to remain flexible to the desires of the workforce. And even DataFax is going to have to do that. And yes, I think hybrid work will continue. However, most recently, really in the last couple of weeks, I'm hearing and reading more about how companies are really feeling that this remote work, there has been a loss in culture and there has been a loss in collaboration, just that connectivity. Just last week, we brought in all of our management to an in-person meeting, really one of the first times we've met in a long time. And the energy was so high. The collaboration was awesome. The ideas were flowing. I mean, it was just like, wow, we're unstoppable, you know, is what was going through our own minds, right? And you just don't get that on a Zoom meeting, right? I mean, you just can't. We're all Zoomed out, you know, mm-hmm. New terminology, well, sure. Right? So I think companies are going to have to bring people back in. I think employees want to come back in, but we still have to allow that flexibility more so than we ever have.
So you mentioned quite a few books that you've read that you've learned from over time. Was there anybody specific that mentored you as you built the business?
You know, my old boss at Equifax, who was also a silent partner in DataFax and who I bought out in 2005, is still around. He's still very near and dear to me. And he's probably been my shoulder, my, you know, person on my shoulder giving me advice since I was probably 20. I just turned 60, right? So I've had a lot of great advice and a lot of those one-liners that you just remember. And I know that at any given time, I can pick up the phone and get very sound advice.
It's truly a blessing to have that kind of a mentor.
Yes, it is.
For sure. What was the biggest challenge that you faced in growing your business?
Keeping up with technology, as you can imagine, over 32 years, we've gone from basic manually typing reports or some sort of Selectric typewriter, maybe an old DOS system. Then it went into dial-up modems, and then it was floppy disks of software you were installing, and then it was internet and cloud, and just continuing to stay competitive and doing it. If not at the very beginning, but you certainly can't be the last adopter, right? So we've been early adopters in some things, very early adopters, and then right in the beginning on others. But really, technology is the key, and more so than ever. I mean, it's warp speed right now in integrations with our software, applicant tracking system integrations for all of the employers. We have every integration you could imagine so that it's seamless for the applicant. It's loaded in and out, exchange of data between our systems and the employer systems. Even with all of our partners, all of our vendors, we have all of these integrations, and we're just gathering, investigating, and streaming data across a lot of bands all day, every day, all in a secure fashion, of course. Security and data protection are paramount. But it's really the technology. And I keep, we brainstorm what's next, what's next, what's next. And there's some pretty cool stuff, out there now and some things we're hoping to dabble in.
Can you give us some examples?
No, I can't.
Oh, that's not a very nice tease.
Is one of them the metaverse?
Yeah, the metaverse.
Oh, my goodness.
So if you could go back in time and give yourself some advice, what would you do?
I would say buy more businesses faster. We have had two acquisitions in our history, 2014, 2019. And of course, again, we sold those other two divisions in 2021. We've never desired to be the biggest. Certainly, that has never been our goal. But I think if we'd had some acquisitions sooner, really just those economies of scale and just even being bigger would have helped us in some ways. But we've always been so committed to the customer and being able to serve the customer. I see so many competitors more focused on their bottom line than the customer's bottom line. And we've always been very customer-centric. But I do think there's value. So we're looking at acquisitions now. We're basically a top-tier mid-sized company. We've won the last 3 years. We were actually named to the HRO Baker's Dozen won the top spot for mid-sized background screening companies. What's cool about that award is you can't buy your way in, you can't bribe your way in, you can't do anything. This is from purely customer feedback that they get and put it through an algorithm of some sort, and it spits out the winners. And so we believe in our model of customer service first and our size. We always say, we're big enough to do anything you want, but we're just the right size and focused on you. And so customers can take comfort in that because there's nothing we can't give them, but they're going to be a much bigger fish in our pond.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Congratulations.
What do you think about potentially, I mean, is this something for you with your exit strategy for the company? Are you, where do you think you'll be in 10 years, I guess is really what I'm thinking.
So when we sold the two divisions in July, and we could have sold the whole company then, and quite frankly, we get solicited every week. M&A activity in our field is huge right now. And we're like, well, aren't you ready to retire? Aren't you ready? You know, you've been doing this a long time, you know, like I see some gray hair, right? And I'm like, no, I'm not selling the background screening division to anybody. I'm still excited about what we do every day. Very passionate about helping our customers. You know, we help the consumer. It's like we're at that point where this is a big deal, people getting a job, right? We're helping employers make a good selection, and we're really helping consumers get the right job for them, too. And we were in the lending space. I mean, buying a house is usually your biggest purchase. So we were involved with two big decisions in people's lives, and I'm still excited about that. I don't want to retire. I don't want to sell. I want to grow. Like I said, we're looking for acquisitions now. And just continue to build up the best background screening business that we can possibly build and serve as many customers as we possibly can, but still maintain that conservative and controlled growth approach.
And your background screens, you don't do them. They're not just Memphis-centric. It's
national. We have huge name brands, household name brands that we do nationally and internationally, right? Probably only about 17% of our business is actually in Memphis. Are based here. We have so much business outside of Memphis, but some super great customers, a lot of great customers here in Memphis.
Who would you say is your biggest competitor?
From an 800-pound gorilla standpoint, there's the companies called Sterling and First Advantage and HireRight. They're really the Walmart of the space, you know, the 800-pound gorilla. And then there's a lot of mid-sized companies like us. And then there's the very small 2 and 3 person, 5 person shop. But we compete on a very large scale with these very big guys. You know, I think they're probably sick of hearing our name at this point.
Well, that's a good problem for you to have, isn't it? You want to be that one that they're all worried about.
Do countries outside of the U.S. do this significantly different than inside?
Well, I don't know that they do it significantly different, but the PBSA has a whole international arm, and that's Professional Background Screeners Association. So the international background screening world is very big, very vibrant, and every country has their own rules about what data is available, how quickly it's available. Generally, data is not available as quickly in countries, but we background screen all over the world, and we have connections into those places, and every country is different.
I have a very important question, the one that we ponder all the time. Do you think that entrepreneurs are born or taught?
You heard the pause there. I don't normally pause, but I would say it's a combination of both, with maybe a little bit of born and then how you're raised, right? And I think entrepreneurs have to be naturally curious and naturally problem solvers and always wanting to figure out how something works and make it better. And that's the privilege of being an entrepreneur, is we get to do that. We get to either create something new or make something better. And sometimes we're even making what we created better. And so that's the fun part. But I also think if you're a lifelong learner, you know, anybody can be an entrepreneur. But I think that, you know, part of the what makes an entrepreneur successful or any new business is you don't start the business for the money. You never should start a business thinking you're on some get-rich-quick scheme. Because if you've got a heart for service and great financial management skills, and you know when to hire and let go, which is a big problem for some entrepreneurs, they can't let go, so they never grow their business. But if you can learn that, you can grow your business, right? But you cannot be spending every dime. And most businesses fail, as you know, in the first 5 years. And sometimes that's because when the owner starts getting just a little taste of money, they don't manage it well. And so you see people go out of business. And you've also got to be a jack of all trades, at least in the beginning. I think that's one of the reasons we were successful. I'm probably not great at anything, but I sure do know how to do a lot. Fairly good.
And you also have obviously done a very good job of hiring the key people to take on those responsibilities.
People are key. You know, I love to travel internationally, and people say, well, Daphne, how can you go for 2 or 3 weeks? And I'm like, they don't need me. They don't need me to run the business. They're running the business. And if you have to be there, you're probably the problem, right? You've got to have great people and then let them do it.
That's a very, very good point, for sure.
So did Memphis play a particular role in the success of the business?
Well, again, we've got some very good, great customers in town that are very loyal. They've been a mainstay of our business, and they're very, very important to me personally as a native Memphian. So Memphis has been important. But from the get-go, we've always had a diverse client base outside of Memphis and been very successful there. But, you know, Memphis is my hometown. I love Memphis. We certainly have momentum in Memphis. And as a native Memphian, you know, sometimes we're the hardest on ourselves. And people that have moved here, they go, wow, Memphis is so great. And it really is. And so by getting involved in the community, you really help become part of the solution. And, you know, Memphis is, we've got that grit and grind and soul that people talk about. And it's true and it's real. And there's billions of dollars in investment here now, and the diversity here is there, the talent is here, and it's just our time, right? It's just our time. And so that's what I'm excited about, and why Memphis will always be our home at DataFax.
One thing, Memphis is really known also for the entrepreneurial spirit.
Absolutely.
Lots of businesses have started here. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's because we... You know, it's like something in the water, right, Pearson?
Back to your
what you like to say. There's just something here that inspires people. And sometimes when Memphis has not had a solution, we've had people willing here to step up and be the solution, right? And so that's what makes Memphis great. And there's a lot of resources here for new entrepreneurs that some of us oldpreneurs, I call us, we didn't have. And so Memphis has put so much money into the infrastructure of entrepreneurs now that it can just carry on forever and ever. And us old guys, we're just clamoring to help new people also. And so I think that new entrepreneurs have a lot of support. And Memphis has such great cost of living. There's no reason businesses can't thrive here.
So if you were in Memphis and thinking of starting a business, where would you point them?
Oh, I would certainly point them to the Epicenter. I would point them to Pearson. I would point them to the podcast and let them listen
great
to some
answers.
Of the success stories. And, you know, there's just a ton of resources here. And, you know, the Cruz Center at the University of Memphis, which, by the way, is another pillar of our community that's just on fire right now, the University of Memphis, as well as Christian Brothers. And, you know, I just get so excited when I start talking about all the great things going on in Memphis that can help any business succeed and just anybody that wants to come work here.
Earlier in our conversation, you mentioned that your employees, that you've been involved and you keep them involved in the community and that you've done things with youth villages. How important do you think that is to your company and to the community?
Well, I think it's important to the employees. More and more of the younger generation, they're looking for companies that are involved in their communities. They want to give back, right? And they want to have a vehicle through which to give back. And so as an employer, you can offer them a path to give back. And certainly for the community, I mean, Memphis is so philanthropic, as you know, one of the top in the United States. And we've got a lot of nonprofits here. And frankly, there's a lot of need here to serve. So there, everywhere you look, there's a place to plug in and a place to do good. And that's our job, especially as a successful entrepreneur. I've always believed, and I stress this, you know, to whom much has been given, much is expected. And there's a lot that we can do and serve, and our employees love to get engaged. They love to go out on Easter egg hunts for youth villages, or, you know, pumpkin carvings, or we do birthday parties, you name it, you know, holiday hero things. And, you know, you just open up your heart, you open up your wallet, and it's a win-win.
Well said.
For sure.
Yeah.
So what else makes you excited about Memphis today?
I think that we've been an underappreciated city, that for the first time in a long time, we've got the right leadership with our politics. We've got the right leadership at the chamber. We've got the business community connected to the city at tighter than maybe ever before. And just those stars are aligning. And Memphis is getting good press. You know, it's easy to see the bad press. And certainly we do have a crime problem. But so do other cities, right? We just don't hear about those as much. But the stars are really aligning in Memphis. And, you know, when you look at, we've got the highest number, I think, of small businesses and startups here. We've got the most African-American tech talent. We've got one of the lowest cost of living. We're the logistics hub. We've got the busiest airport. We've got an amazing renovations at our airport, main airport, convention center. Just all of the stars are aligning for Memphis. And, you know, just the Ford announcement, you know, that's huge for our region. Not just Memphis will benefit, but it really puts us on the map for generations to come and wealth equity and those types of things. So it's an exciting time. And I think people better watch out. You know, Memphis is kind of flying in a little bit under the radar, but we're on a lot of people's radars right now. And that's exciting.
That's what I love about this podcast. Every time we have one, I just am so excited about this city.
I agree.
So many good things happening.
Yes, yes.
She didn't even mention the Grizzlies yet.
Oh, and the Grizzlies, of course. Go Grizz.
Go Grizz. Yes. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Lots of
love
good
Memphis,
things.
Love, I will always call it Memphis State. Love University of Memphis.
Gave you a good education for sure. Well, tell us a little bit about Daphne. What do you do when you're not working?
Well, when I'm not working, I'm traveling, right? I love, love, love to travel. And, you know, COVID, a little bit of damper on that. But if it's anywhere in the world, I want to go, right? I just love to travel. I'm happy when I'm traveling. It's the most wonderful education for you and your children of any and all ages. I love to read. I love business books. I love dogs. We always have rescue dogs. Love, love dogs. If I ever win the lottery, there's going to be some massive dog rescue farm somewhere with Live On Vet site. And I've just got all that planned out. I haven't won the lottery yet. But, you know, but travel is just my heart and soul. It's just traveling. I'm so happy when I get to see new, experience new things.
What's the coolest thing you've ever seen when you've been on a trip?
Oh, my God. I love so many things. I love the catacombs in Paris. If you've ever been to underground Paris into the catacombs, it's like Indiana Jones, you know. You really, you know, you just kind of feel like that. I've been dog sledding in Alaska. I've helicoptered off glaciers. I've four-wheelered out with bears in Alaska. You know, we've certainly awesome snorkeling all over the Caribbean. I mean, it's just top of the Eiffel Tower for lunch. I mean, just London, we love it all. I just want to do it all the time.
When I grow up, I want to be Daphne Large, but I do not want to go out and be with the bears, okay?
Just go. So. Just plan it. Just book it. You know, these people say, well, you know, I didn't have time for vacation. I was working. I'm like, you know what? If you drop dead tomorrow, they're going to replace you so fast.
That's right.
But your family, and you can't replace those memories. Just go do it.
Yes, I'm a big advocate for travel. It just broadens everyone's
horizons.
Right.
Me too. Mm-hmm. Me too.
What would people be surprised to find out about you?
I'm a closet race car driver.
Wow. I'm
details,
surprised
please.
Right here.
Yes.
I love fast cars. I've always loved fast cars. I always drive a fast car. I love race sports cars. I like speed. But yeah, love
how many
that.
Tickets have you had?
Well, you know, amazing. I think they've just got my face plugged in somewhere and they're like, just forget it.
Yeah. It's just Daphne.
Well, she'll be in jail if we just keep giving her a ticket. But, you know, and I'm an adventurer, right? I mean, like, I could have been a pirate or something or an adventurer somewhere. I just have that spirit. That's why I love travel so much and why I love being an entrepreneur. It's a big adventure all the time.
Never ends.
That's for sure.
Have you ever done NASCAR training?
No, I have not, but that could happen.
Yeah, okay.
Didn't you do a thing where you drove one of the tracks?
No, actually, my husband bought me one of those, and I chose to do something else that we all could do as a family. But so I did not pull the trigger on that, but I may have to.
You know. It's on the horizon, right, for sure. What are three things that you cannot live without?
Oh.
Not faith, family, friends.
Oh, my goodness. Not
I just
faith,
took them all.
Family, friends. That's right. Okay. Travel.
Uh-huh.
Dogs. And can I say data facts? It's not faith or family or friends.
You certainly can.
Yeah, sure.
There's no rules here. Yeah. So.
Data facts, travel, and dogs.
How many dogs do you have right now?
Just two rescues. They've been with us 14 years and 7 years. I had a third, but we lost her in 19. So I'm really ready for another one.
Oh, I bet there's lots of places that can
rescues.
Make that possible.
Always get a rescue.
I agree. Ours is a rescue too. They're pretty special.
Yes, they are.
So if somebody wanted to learn more about DataFax or you personally, where would they go?
Well, they can certainly go to datafax.com. You can find us on LinkedIn, same place, Facebook, same, DataFax. Certainly hit me up at DaphneL@datafax.com, and we'd love to talk to you more.
This has been so much fun. Every time I'm around you, I'm excited about all of the things that you've got going on.
Pearson. Yeah, that's the pot calling the kettle, right? And you too, Jay. So y'all are great Memphians, and I just appreciate all that you do for our town and for me.
Thank you. We're happy to do it. It's always great.
Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
We hope you enjoyed our interview with Daphne Large. If you want to hear more about Daphne and her company, you can find information in our show notes.